You on the line. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. It's 6:05. We're going to go ahead and do the board roll call. This is Paul Ashton, board member.
This is Bobby Strang, board member.
Morgan Kane, board member.
Great. Thanks, everyone. I don't believe we have a member of the public here for the public comment period, so we'll keep it moving. If everyone could take a moment to look at the minutes from the May 17th meeting to see if there are any changes or if they can be approved as presented.
I'll move to accept as presented.
Okay, I second that motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Great. The minutes are approved. Old business.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Under old business, we have the... I just want to offer an update to the National Police Foundation. They've completed their independent review of the 2017 presidential inauguration protests. That has been... The report was published at the beginning of July, I believe. The current status is that the MPD's after action report has been completed but is not being released at the request of the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Attorney General's Office. There are still civil suits pending on the case, Our part of it now is to just monitor what is going on with the civil suits, and eventually, if and when the police department's after action report is released, we can compare that to our recommendations. And I know that MPD has already made some changes to its training curriculum with the special operations people, I would suspect that they'll be making some more adjustments to their procedures in the future. But right now, our primary role is completed with the publication of the Police Foundation report. I just want to update everybody on that. And now I'll just go into the agency report too. And the next item on the agenda, we're on agenda item numbers 6, director's report. I wanted to point out to you that our complaints are still significantly higher this year. Mona will be talking about that in a lot more detail. But we are again on track to receive a very high number of complaints this year. And the other item of critical issue that we're monitoring right now is the stop and frisk data, and in particular how it pertains to the ACL lawsuit that's been filed against the district and the MPD regarding collection of stop and frisk data. We understand that there is probably a status conference scheduled tomorrow on that hearing. Is that right, Alicia?
Yeah, there's a status hearing tomorrow. So we'll see if any new information comes out from that.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't have a position certainly on the lawsuit, but it's something we're monitoring because you know, we were called to testify regarding stop and frisk. We were asked a lot of questions at the last council hearing on the stop and frisk. And one of the reasons is it's because it's part of the NEAR Act requirements that the police department collect the data, and they have not been collecting the data. And this current budget, they were allocated additional money to begin collecting the data. So that's why we have some peripheral involvement in monitoring it, making sure that the NEAR Act is followed and evaluating and helping the department evaluate the data. And I also offered our assistance if they need help collecting the data and organizing it and looking at other ways to do it in an expeditious manner. So we're certainly willing to help them on that in any way that we can. So those are the main critical issues that we're going to continue keeping an eye on. Also, on August 12th, we monitored the Unite the Right First Amendment Assembly. It was uneventful, so no report was filed. We're going to be talking in a few minutes about a couple of policy report recommendations. Alicia will talk about the body-worn camera policy recommendation, and she'll talk about the outside employment policy recommendation. Under the board report for outreach, the only thing I wanted to mention there was, you know, we typically have a lot of contact with outreach through our investigators. Some of them are here tonight that were recently involved in some SITs and programs at the various universities and high schools in the area. But I wanted to point out that the Legal Aid Society of D.C. and the Central American Resource Center are now community partners with OPC, and they're added to our community partner list. And we're very glad to have them on board, too, as community partners. For staffing updates, we had a couple staff members leave, and we hired a couple staff members. None of them are here right now. We already introduced Sean last time, right, at the last meeting, so you've been here so long. And we had the National Center for Transgender Equality come to the office on July 16th for a brown bag where they have representatives come to talk about their organization and their recent policy projects and services they provide. And we also had a brown bag this Monday from the Network for Victim Recovery. It's a D.C. It's a nonprofit D.C. organization. This funded, significant funding is coming from the D.C. government, but their representative discussed services they provide for case management and legal services for victims of all crimes, and we talked with them about how we can interact with them and help them and how they can help us with our mission for victims of crimes. Yeah, go ahead.
But you used to, could you email either myself or other board members, anyone who's interested, when the brown bags happen? I know you used to do that. I don't think I saw these two. And they're ones I would have.
Sure, we'll try to be more consistent about that. You might have it sitting in your inbox. I don't know.
Are you saying I'm not checking my email in a timely fashion? Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, but certainly everybody, board members are certainly invited to those.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, it says brown bag, but there's no food. You have to bring your own. You have to bring your brown bag.
Why is that? That we call it a brown bag when food is not provided.
Well, brown bag implies you need to bring own food in a brown bag.
There is a McDonald's a block away that has Big Macs, 2 for $5 this week.
Well, back on the Big Macs. Anyway.
All right. Dismissal schedule is published as part of the board report. And then the last thing I want to get to is the investigation status and the number of cases we have open and the status of the investigations, and I'll ask Mona to summarize that for us.
So we do, as you can see, for a number of complaints received, we still are slightly over where we were last year. So as you remember, at the end of last year, we were close to 80% increase in complaints above beyond the previous year. And this year's are, a smaller increase, but still we're continuing the increase from 2 years ago and previous years. And so we're still going to be probably close. I think we're somewhere around 760 now. So we'll probably be close. Last year was 773, so we'll probably be close. I don't think we'll hit 800, but we'll be somewhere in the upper 700s, consistent with last year. So the increase over last year will probably be nominal, maybe just 1 or 2 percentage points. However, it still has maintained an overall increase from previous years. So we're maintaining that. But I think, you know, the good thing is closure types where, you know, we have more CE decision, more sustained complaints, more policy trainings, more rapid resolutions, and successful mediation. So I think as far as that goes, you know, it shows that we're the investigations are, you know, our cases are being resolved in, you know, different ways, and of course more dismissals as well. But I think that that's good that we have kind of alternative ways to resolve cases that I think helps the community and, you know, and accountability and improves community trust through mediations, rapid resolutions, policy, you know, training, opportunities for officers and things like that. So those have all increased, so I think is good. And also overall our open are down, even though we've still had a lot more cases this year and our closed is up. So it does appear that we're keeping up with the increase. So that's been a positive thing to highlight, even though, again, we're, you know, still have quite high numbers. We seem to be still keeping up with it. So I want to highlight that. And we do get a lot. You'll see I'm still keeping track of referrals from MPD, so we still are up over last year. Now, last year, remember, for the fiscal year, we didn't really start getting them until a couple months into the fiscal year, but I'll be curious to see next year if that really evens out or, you know, continues to be higher. So it's about 40, 50 above where it was last year for referrals from MPD.
And just out of curiosity, related to the dismissals, do we have a sense of what the vast majority of them are?
I mean, there are a lot of fail to cooperates, but I think last time when we looked, it was about 40% of them. And that was, but there are, you know, fail to cooperate with mediations, not a huge percentage,
right.
Fail to cooperate with investigations, and then merits, whether being summary dismissals or full dismissals. So, I didn't break that down, but just based on last time, it was, you know, a little less than half were failed to cooperate.
Could you maybe send that around? I would be curious to see how that breaks out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to necessarily have it in the
right.
The
but just
report.
As far as
yeah.
So, would it be just in general the dismissals, like that were just overall failed to cooperate versus merit dismissals? Is that, or do you want it broken down from failed to cooperate with investigation versus failed to cooperate with mediations versus merit?
I would probably, I'm curious about more of the detail.
Okay.
I'm just
okay.
curious, particularly because we're talking about such, we have such a high volume
yeah.
now, including
yeah.
on the dismissal side.
Yes.
I'd just be curious to kind of see what that looks like.
And there's also, you know, and it's not a huge percentage, but there's also the ones that we dismiss because we can't identify the officers.
Right.
That's gone down because of body-worn camera, but there are still those cases,
yeah.
and typically they're either off-duty or just quick incidents where there's no body-worn camera was turned on, which kind of makes sense if it's just kind of a quick interaction sometimes. So that's a smaller, but I can also include that just
yeah.
to see. I don't think that that's really grown much. That's always typically a very small percentage,
right.
but we can break it down that way.
I mean, I know that we as the board members see the dismissals, but it's, you know, we see
yeah.
them in the two-week increments.
Right.
And so I'd just be curious in the aggregate what it looks like.
Okay. Yep. I can do that. And I can just send it by email.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
So our you know, fiscal year ends in a little bit over a week from now, so we're very close to that 80% over the year before this again. And probably by the end of October, our goal is to have our annual report done, breaking down everything for the whole year. We're in the annual report drafting process now. So at some point before the next meeting is scheduled, you'll be receiving a draft of the annual report, and I'll be asking for your comments, questions, and hopefully concurrence and approval of the report so we can publish that quite possibly by the end of October, because we'll have all of the data in another week and a half or so that we need to put in it. One of the things that you'll see a minor difference in the annual report that pertains to what we're talking about right now is that I want to make a point to illustrate to the community that we now have more dispositions than just complaint examination and dismissal at our disposal now, thanks to the NERAC. So the number of policy trainings that we've been using and a rapid resolution referrals back to the MPD commanders has gone up probably pretty much doubled over the past year, because we're getting better at using those types of resolutions to help with whatever the situation is involving the complaint. So I like to emphasize, and if you ever, you know, as board members, talk to community members or anyone ask you a question, I always like to tell people that we don't measure our success solely by how many complaint examination cases, that is, how many sustained complaints we have. We measure our success by really on how confident the community is on how we do our job, on how they trust us and how they trust MPD. And we have some new things at our disposal now that we're using more and more that I hope will reach that point where they are able to improve the trust with MPD and our own agency.
I do have a question now, because I would agree that the trust the community has in OPC is paramount. Have you looked in the past recently or looked into a formal customer service satisfaction type survey?
Yeah, I think we have talked about that in the past, and our budget for this fiscal year does not support doing like a customer service support survey. However, I am aware of one being conducted now for MPD through, I forgot the name of the DC agency.
I got a text yesterday.
What was that?
It was a text. It was a text asking if I would participate in a survey studying MPD community relations.
It's one of the new agencies that was created by the NEAR Act, but I'm blanking on the name of the agency.
And it just was text back to participate.
So there was a DC government agency that was allocated some funds to do that for MPD, and that might be very helpful for us to watch that and see what. Apparently, it's farther along than I thought.
I meant to tell you yesterday, and I was like, oh, I don't think I should participate. I got one. I was like, is this, did somebody, but it was one of those. But, I can pull it up and at least see what it looks like, just so we have that information. But, randomly, I got one yesterday, I guess. I mean, I am a voting, a citizen who votes in the district, so I don't know if they're going to, just DC citizen. Do you know, Commander Kane, if those are going just to, like, voter registration people, or do you have any idea? Okay, anyway.
I would imagine that MPD is not involved with it heavily, because that would skew it.
But I would just be curious if they knew what the...
I have to imagine they're totally separate from it.
Okay.
And this was it's being conducted by the agency that was created under the NEAR Act.
Yeah, I'm just blanking on the name.
Criminal Justice.
It's not the Criminal Justice. No, it's a new. Something.
It's not the CJCC.
It's a new agency.
CIC or something? I forget. I don't know.
I can find it and email it to you.
I know who it is. I just can't think of the name.
So the texts are going out, and they are, I guess, hitting, they're working on sending out surveys.
That's good information.
Good.
Any other questions on the investigation status or the director's report?
I have none.
All right. Then, Mr. Chair, I suggest we go on to item 7A. And discuss the policy report 18-3, viewing body-worn camera footage on scene. Commander Kane, are you still on the line?
No, that little beepy noise was
her dropping off. Why don't we give her?
Should we try to get hold of her? Or do we have to wait?
We have to wait for her to call back in.
Okay.
What's your pleasure?
Why don't we wait for Commander Kane? Because we won't be able to vote on any of this stuff until she's...
I think it, right when I asked that question, I heard it beep.
Yeah,
I heard it beep as well.
She shouldn't have asked.
You can pause if you want to take an adjournment.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
No worries.
Thank you for calling back.
Of course.
Okay, so we're going to go back to the agenda then.
Yes.
The chairman has called item 7. A, which is policy report 18.3, viewing body-worn camera footage on scene. And Alicia Yass is going to discuss that policy recommendation.
Yes, thank you. So this is the shorter of the two. This is policy report 18-3, which is viewing body-worn camera footage on scene. The investigators had noticed in a couple of different cases that they could observe through one officer's body-worn camera footage that officers were viewing body-worn camera footage on scene on their cell phones, on their through an app that the Axon provides to the officers. And this is actually specifically prohibited in the body-worn camera general order. So we just wanted to point it out. It was sort of an ancillary thing to the complaints, and the complaints that it was coming up in, it wasn't actually part of the complaint, nor would it fall into any of our complaint categories. But in reviewing body-worn camera footage for a complaint, it was something that the investigators were noticing and was just causing alarm because it was counter to the general order. So again, the body-worn camera program is still only a couple of years old. So we make a note at the beginning of this about how it is a new program and how when programs are new, you want to be constantly evaluating them to see any issues that might be causing concern. In some of the instances, we did see that, or in one of the instances that is used as an example, the complainant did see that the officer was doing this and did question it. So clearly it's something that caused some alarm. So we just wanted to point it out to MPD. Clearly the body-worn camera program is something that the city is very proud of. It's been enormously helpful to us as investigators. I think it's MPD's officers have been getting used to it and are also seeing many of the benefits of the body-worn camera program, but we want to make sure that we're continuing to make it the best that it can possibly be. So this is a very simple recommendation, just that MPD clarify the intention of the general order, and that when the general order states that viewing of BWC recordings at the scene of an incident is prohibited, that the MPD members understand what scene of the incident includes, and that the members are aware that that section applies to them as well as the public, because we realize that there could be some misinterpretation of that. And second, just that MPD remind all officers that body-worn camera footage is to be viewed only for official law enforcement purposes. One of the examples included officers watching some body-worn camera footage to sort of mock a situation that had occurred. So clearly not an official law enforcement purpose. So that is the general gist of this policy report. Hopefully you all have had a chance to read it. And if not, let me know, and I can go into more detail. But I am happy to answer any questions on the body-worn camera footage on scene policy report.
I have no questions.
All right.
If there's no questions, is there a motion to approve the is it a policy report?
Policy report.
Yeah, the policy report.
I'll move to it. Approve the policy report.
Sure. Is there a second?
Second.
Awesome. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Great.
Aye.
There we go.
If you have any questions, Commander Kane, since you're not in the room, just let us know.
Sure.
Oh, I will. I've read it.
I mean about like what's happening in the room.
No.
If we move on to item B, I can find my agenda, the policy recommendation for MPD's outside employment policies.
Yes. So this one, clearly a little bit longer, a little more in depth. I think everyone's aware, our oversight extends to the officers who are working in outside employment or off-duty employment. The district does allow officers in MPD to work outside of their jobs in their uniforms for other businesses as long as they are not related to alcohol or loans. There's a list of a couple of things they're not allowed to do. But generally, you'll see these officers working at places such as Walmart or acting as sort of extra security for businesses that employ them. There are benefits to this, obviously, for the officers. They gain extra income. The department supports it because it allows there to be more of a presence of MPD officers on the streets, even when those officers are not on duty. And so there's clearly benefits to the program, but we also want to make sure that the program is monitored and that there is not room for corruption, that there is not room for officers to abuse the system, and that that basically the program works as it should. Again, investigators do see many issues come up with officers in their outside employment. A lot of these issues are similar to issues that would come up in their regular course of duty. But then there's also some issues that have come up that are sort of unique situations that are presented from being in that outside employment situation, and what I've sort of dubbed the dual master problem of they're reporting to the business that they work for as well as MPD. And it can cause confusion for the officer. It can cause confusion for the complainant who is engaged in some sort of situation. The example we use in the recommendation is about a Wendy's parking lot and officers issuing tickets. This is an issue that has not only come to us through complaints, it's also been covered in the media. Clearly, it is of great concern, which is one of the reasons we use it as the example, because it also clearly highlights sort of the problem of who is ultimately responsible for those actions. So that's what brought about this policy recommendation. We looked into several things that case example and what issues that raised. And then we looked at some things that other jurisdictions have done to mitigate problems with outside employment and sort of pulled some best practices and things that could be some easy fixes for MPD to sort of help mitigate some of these problems. You all saw the letter we got from MPD to our initial draft. Where we had gone a little too far and stepped on some things that were in law and in regulation that had been passed by the city council. And we sort of wanted to, that would obviously be a much bigger process to make changes that the council would have to change. So we did modify to make sure that the recommendations were not counter to anything that was in regulations or law, so that the MPD could enact these recommendations through general order and practices. So the recommendations that were ultimately made were that MPD should update their general order on outside employment since it has not been updated in 14 years, and specifically make sure that the term direct police action is defined. In the general order and in the law, it says that officers who are working outside employment are not to engage in direct police action. However, what direct police action is not defined. So having an officer not engage in something when they don't know what that includes can probably cause confusion. So that was why we included that recommendation. And then there's B and C in part one are sort of an either or. The lesser option would be for MPD to collect salary information from the officers for their outside employment. MPD already requires officers to fill out forms quarterly, I believe, but at least annually, documenting how many hours they've worked in outside employment. So this could easily be added to that. And it would increase transparency of who the officers are working for and sort of where their loyalties are and limit the potential for corruption. And even though it is what the officers are doing on their own time, they are using government resources, which is a reason for the government to be tracking that information. An alternative to that would be that MPD could have civilian personnel act as a liaison for entities seeking officers for outside employment and sort of oversee that process and make sure that everything is in line. This was a new one that was added into this draft of the policy recommendation. Previously, the previous draft had said that MPD should have an office that would do that, and that made it unclear that it would be members or civilian personnel. And the law and regs says that officers of MPD or members of MPD cannot broker, which means establish jobs for other people. So if this office were to be created, it would have to be civilian personnel because MPD members could not be overseeing the outside employment of other members. So that was where that came from. The second full recommendation is the employment policy, or so I'm sorry, the uniform policy, and establish MPD, recommending that MPD establish some sort of uniform identifier for officers to use when they are engaged in outside employment. Again, the regulations and law do say that employers cannot require a special uniform from officers. It says officers need to be using MPD-issued uniform, but this recommendation is for MPD to issue a specific marker to the officers for outside employment. One of the examples is a high-visibility vest or jacket. We've already seen MPD utilize such an item. The Unite to Right rally that we monitored, Doug, I remember you were out there on the streets. All the officers who were out there were in very neon vests that they wore over their uniforms. So something similar to that, that would be department issued, would satisfy this. And it would lead to less confusion among community members who are dealing with those officers, knowing if they're off, if they're out in outside employment or if they're on duty. The final part of the recommendation is that MPD require officers who choose to engage in outside employment to complete a specialized training on what is required of them for outside employment. This specifically also goes back to that direct police action and making clear to the members who are engaged in outside employment what direct police action is and what they can and cannot do when in outside employment. So those are the recommendations in this report. I know this one was a little longer and a little bit more to work through, but if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. If anyone has comments, concerns, anything like that, I'm happy to hear them.
If there are no questions, comments, or concerns, is there a motion to approve the policy recommendation?
I'll move to approve the policy recommendation.
I second the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Awesome. It is so approved. We have a lot of stuff to approve today.
I know. It's rare to have it all at one time.
I know. Thanks, everyone. Next, we're moving on to the three mediators. We'll start with Peter Swanson.
If you want, I can summarize his credentials, but it is in the packet. Sure. I mean, Mr. Swanson has over 30 years of dispute resolution and mediation experience. He's a member of a firm in Alexandria that exclusively does mediation. They work not just a local basis, but on an international basis. He has listed, I don't know, 20-some different countries that he's worked with to USAID and federal agencies on conflict resolution. And he expressed an interest in his firm, two of the mediators in his firm, himself and this second individual, the next individual, to help us out on working with some of our mediations. So we would certainly like to take advantage of that.
Okay. Thanks. Are there any questions related to Mr. Swanson?
His resume made me feel like an underachiever.
I will say that, yes, his resume did make me also feel like a bit of an underachiever.
I'm going to move to approve Mr. Swanson as a mediator.
I second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 So approved. Moving on to Robert Randolph.
All right. Mr. Robert Randolph is a partner of Peter Swanson, the individual that was just approved. They are partners in the same firm. He also has a very lengthy resume that makes everyone feel underqualified.
And quite similar.
And quite similar, doing international mediation work, 30-plus years of experience. He's also a lawyer with a degree from Harvard Law School, with a master's from Georgetown Law School, and he continues to do a lot of ADR mediation work. And we recommend him for appointment.
And it was nicely highlighted as well, key words in this one. I move to approve, I motion to approve Robert Randolph. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Moving on to Roslyn Tyson.
Miss Roslyn Tyson works down the street at the Veterans Affairs Administration. She's got about a decade's worth of experience doing conflict resolution and alternative dispute resolution. That's her full-time position. Mm-hmm. Doing the work at the Veterans Affairs Office. She is a alternative dispute resolution specialist, and that's what she does full-time for a living. She's had a lot of training in ADR and mediation. She's also been an instructor in ADR and mediation too, so she has a lot of experience, and she would like to help us out during our mediations, and we request her approval also.
Is there a motion to approve Ms. Tyson? Was that a motion to
approve? Yes, me.
That is a motion to approve. Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Commander Kane?
Aye.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Tyson is approved. Is that everything?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, wow, that's everything. We made it through. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion to adjourn the meeting.
I second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The meeting is so adjourned at 6:44. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great evening.
You too.